Welcome back to my channel. So excited to have you, Wendy Vernay, here. Today, we're talking to my friend, Andre. So let's get right into it. Before we begin, I want to thank you so much for liking, sharing, and subscribing. It just goes to show there's hope and positivity on the other side of narcissistic abuse and religious trauma. Andre, thank you so much for coming on the channel. We're so excited to have you here and for volunteering your time.
Yeah, thank you, Wendy. It's nice to finally talk.
Yeah, finally.
Talk it up after all this time, right? So I grew up a Jehovah's Witness. My family was like that model Jehovah's Witness family, where my dad was an elder, my mom was a regular pioneer. And so we were like in the congregation known as being that family. And so growing up, that was life. You know, we would go in service all the time. And there were good memories, you know, looking back. They would always dangle Slurpees in front of our faces to try to get us to stay another hour. And it worked.
Yes.
Right?
Yeah.
I think a lot of people probably did that, but they were good times. And so growing up, that was it. That was life. And, you know, I didn't want to be an astronaut when I was a kid. I don't want to be a firefighter. I wanted to get baptized and go to Bethel, right? Mm-hmm. And so that was the way things were. But then when I got to be about 8 or 9, my mom and dad started having problems in their marriage. And one thing led to another. And my mom ended up having an affair with this guy that was in the congregation, who happened to be one of my dad's friends. And so that just created all kinds of chaos in our life. And it was just like the floor had been dropped from beneath our feet, and it created so much drama and problems. And so for a little while, I don't remember exactly how long, it could have been a year, 2 years, 3 years, we were inactive. So my family stopped going to meetings, and I guess my parents were just trying to process everything. But at the same time, prior to that, my mom ended up getting pregnant that one time she had an affair. So then all of a sudden, this guy starts coming around wanting to be there for his kid. And you can only imagine how crazy that was.
Wow. Yeah. And did you get baptized before this? Did you get baptized young?
No. Okay. I didn't. I never got a chance. And so, yeah, that was complicated. That really mixed things up. And so at that point, you know, we were just kind of floating there and active. A lot of stuff was up in the air, and I was really hurt. You know, I was really angry. I might have prayed to Jehovah about it and asked him, like, what happened? You know, like, but it was a tough time. It was really difficult trying to process that as a little kid, like 10, 11, 12. So we ended up moving from where we were in San Diego, about an hour north, and kind of starting over. You know, my mom, after all that went down, there was a lot of gossip, as you can imagine, in that organization, people talk. And so my mom kind of had to flee this persecution from all these friends of hers that she had known for years, because everybody took my dad's side, which rightfully so. I mean, I get it, but it wasn't easy for my mama. You know, she made a mistake that she regretted. But everybody just, you know, it was like they wanted to put her on a stake and burn her. And so we moved and started over. And again, we were inactive for a little while. So I started middle school around this time. And at that point, you know, my mom was working her ass off trying to put food on the table for 4 kids. My dad at the time was living in San Diego. And it felt like he wasn't really around as much back then. You know, not to say he was a deadbeat, because my dad's always been a great man. But I guess with what we were going through, what I was going through, I was just in a different headspace. And so at that time, you know, my mom's working, my dad's an hour south. It was up to my brother and I to get to school. We would skateboard to school. And then around that time, you know, you're in middle school, you're making new friends. My mom's always at work. So we started hanging out with all the worldly kids.
Oh boy, you know, I know where this is going.
Oh gosh, right, we started skateboarding in the cul-de-sac with little Jimmy, and you know, yeah,
not
we were doing
skateboarding
normal
with worldly kids.
We were doing normal kid stuff,
which, right,
it's crazy thinking about it in, mm-hmm, in retrospect. But started hanging out with these kids, and You know, I was 15, 16. I was angry, just kind of, just wanting to do my thing. So I started smoking weed, started drinking. I kissed a girl for the first time, which, you know, oh, my God. Play and spin the bottle.
This is going to get censored. I know. No, I'm just kidding.
I know. Oh, gosh. I hope YouTube doesn't take this down. yeah. But, yeah, just doing normal kid stuff, right? Like, I think, but as a Jehovah's Witness, that's like, you know, no, you can't be doing that type of stuff. And so around this time when I was like 15, my little brother, his dad, the one that my mom had this affair with, he started coming around again more. And my mom decided to get married to him. And that was freaking crazy. Yeah, that was a tough time. That was something. I guess she had her reasons, you know. I haven't really gone into that with her. We talked about it, but she did what she felt she had to do, right? And that was tough. Holy crap. That was, you know, you got these kids that, you know what went down. We're like in our teenage years, you know, I'm super rebellious. And this guy comes in the mix, marries my mom. And then all of a sudden it's like, well, kids, let's go back to meetings. And it's like,
wow, really? So now you're inactive all this time. You start getting a life. You start establishing your identity as a kid. And then we're going to go back to meetings.
Yeah.
And yeah, was your father at this point, was he still a witness also at this point too, even though they split and you're dealing with the trauma of all of that mayhem?
Yeah. My dad was still a witness. He was in it. But we were living with my mom and kind of going back and forth on the weekends. Right. But then it kind of got to a point where we had friends and, you know, on the weekends, we wanted to hang out with our friends instead of going down and spending time with my dad. So, you know, it was just this time frame when it was difficult to get back to that lifestyle when right. we had been inactive for so long.
Right.
And so on top of that, I got this new stepdad, which we all hated, you know. Like we hated him. And now he's there trying to assert his dominance and we're going to go to meetings now. And it's like, dude, spare me, bro. Like you have no room to talk or say anything. And so all of a sudden this is going down and it was tough. You know, I got in fights with them. My brother and I both like full on physical fights and, you know, got to a point where I was like, you're either going to follow our rules and go to meetings or you can't live here. Like, we're going to kick you out if you don't go to meetings, which is insane. Like, I don't get it. Like, I was talking to my brother about this. He's not a Jehovah's Witness anymore, but he has two sons. And he's like, I could not imagine kicking my son out because of religion. Like, that's crazy to me.
It's just my parents did the same thing. My stepfather, same exact scenario. Just kick my brother out, kick my sister out. And it was... it was when they were just kind of preteens, kind of awkward and figuring out their life when you need your parents the most. It seems that that's what they did. Wow. Wow.
Yeah, that's a rough thing to go through. And that doesn't make you want to go anymore. That's not like going to compel me to be like, you know what? Yeah, that just makes me more angry. That just makes me more like, okay, well, fuck this. I'm just going to continue doing what I'm going to do. So that just led to so much drama within our household. And, you know, it was tough because at the time my mom always like sided with him. And so we were upset with my mom. We were upset with him. Like I hated going to the meetings, but we had to go. And so, you know, we would go, but I was living a double life because I didn't want to go. And so, you know, started hanging out with kids from the Kingdom Hall that were also living a double life. Mm-hmm. So then we all started to party and then we'd all get in trouble. And then there'd be like 20 of us in the back room. Like, oh, it was horrible. It was so awkward.
I don't mean to laugh, but I remember the 90s and the early 2000s. And that was, I just have so many memories of the kids by that description, you know, and, right. and I look back now and I think they were just trying to make it. They were just kind of figuring it out, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
Yeah, exactly. We were just trying to figure it out. Just mm-hmm. being kids, teenagers living as a typical teenager would. But, you know, when you're trying to be a Jehovah's Witness or you have crazy Jehovah's Witness parents, it's just, you know, the hardest thing to deal with. And so those years were very difficult. We got in fights a lot. My brother ended up getting kicked out of the house when he was like 17. And that was his wake up call. He was like, you know what, I'm done. And he left, moved out, and never came back. He decided he didn't want to be a Jehovah's Witness at that time. And so me, I stuck around there living with my family and just trying to make it work. I really wasn't focused on school or work or anything. I was just all over the place, just trying to figure out my life and where I like found my place in life. And so I kept partying. I kept living that lifestyle, got into some harder drugs. And this continued into my early 20s, just trying to figure things out. And so at the time, like, I would go back and forth to my mom and my dad's house, and my dad would help me sometimes and want to help me get my life on track. And I would go through these like roller coasters where like I would feel bad and feel guilty. So then I'd start praying to Jehovah and like want to go back to meetings to try to get my life on track. Sure. Right. Because anytime things weren't working out, it really wasn't like, oh, I just need to be more on top of my shit and just not be such a rapscallion. You know, it's, oh, I got to pray to Jehovah and like, I got to read the Bible more and then my life will get on track. And so I did that, and back and forth I would go. I lived with my dad for a little bit, but it was always so difficult because I never felt like I had a place in the organization. You know, I've always been a musician. I was always in bands, and that was bad. You know, playing in bands was bad. Putting like spiker gel in your hair, that was blue, was bad. That was worldly. Oh, I got in trouble for that many times. Wearing certain clothes was bad. I'll never forget. I was at this gathering.
Me too. Ugh, I hate it.
The worst. I was at this gathering, and there was this brand that I wore a lot. It was called Famous Stars and Straps, and it was from this band, Blink-182, the drummer, Travis Barker. Mm-hmm. And they had these really cool belts with like this Cadillac. And it was a Cadillac logo. And in the middle of it, there was like this little American flag. And I went to this gathering wearing this. And all the parents like put me on blast in front of everybody there. Like, oh, how could you? That's the American flag. And I felt so horrible. Like looking back on that, like to do that to a kid, like was so fucked up.
Yeah.
But I just never felt like I belonged there. And so, you know, I had friends that couldn't hang out with me because I was bad association, and I felt really lonely. And it's like, okay, I'm trying to do this, but yet you guys aren't making it any easier on me. And so it was always difficult trying to be a Jehovah's Witness for me, you know, very difficult. And so that's why I kept just kind of going through this roller coaster of emotions. I was in a glass case of emotions. And so, yeah, that was life for me for several years, you know, into my early 20s. And, you know, I would go through these phases where like, I'd be like, okay, screw this. I would go move back with my mom because she was kind of more lax about the whole J-Dub thing. My dad was always much more like rigid and like textbook about it, right? That elder mentality. But my mom kind of, there was like wiggle room there, kind of, you know what I mean? And so I'd move back with her. I'd start hanging out with my friends again and go party again. And I ended up getting really into drugs and went down a really dark path for a while where I was living in my car and I was just at rock bottom. And finally it was like, I need help, right? And so I call my mom and I'm like, Mom, I need help. Like, please help me. Like, and she's like, okay, if I help you, you're going to have to do this my way. And so you have to get clean and you have to go to meetings. I was like, okay, all right, I'll do what you say. Like, let's do this. So I did. I cut off ties with everybody. I changed my number. I deleted all my social media. It's funny. I was thinking about that. Like, I look back throughout the course of the last like 10 years plus, I probably deleted my social media like 5 times because I'm like, I need to cut everybody off. Yeah. I need to just focus on the truth.
Extreme.
Right? Like,
yes.
Extreme. Mm-hmm. I would go AWOL because I just wanted to try to do right. Mm-hmm. And so I did that. And I really focused. You know, I stopped hanging out with everybody. Like, went AWOL and started to study with one of the brothers, started going in service and got clean and started feeling good. And it's a trip because I was getting more healthy. I was getting more clarity, but at the same time, I was studying. So there was, in my mind, a correlation between the two at the time.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm. This is right. Like this is happening because of Jehovah. Mm-hmm. So I took that as, yeah, this is what I should be doing. And so I got baptized when I was around 26. Yeah, 26. Yeah, let's just say 26. 26. I got baptized at 26, and I thought it was a great idea, and I was happy, and everybody was so proud of me, and I felt so good. And shortly after, my stepdad and my mom had started having some issues, started having some problems. There was always a lot of issues with that. And a series of events took place and happened where I hit a low. I hit a low hard, like, bam, like right after I got baptized. It must have been less than a year, I would say, where just we got uprooted, lost our home, like shit hit the fan. And we went through this really tough time. And so I'm depressed. I'm feeling like crap. My mom's depressed. Like we're all just in limbo. And at that point, you know, I went to go stay with some of my cousins who are around the area who really weren't Jehovah's Witness at that time, still partying, still living this lifestyle. And I went there to just kind of get away and decompress. And I ended up having sex with this girl. And so at that point, I was like feeling all bad about that, feeling all guilty. And so I went and talked to the brothers, and I ended up getting this fellowship. And that was a whole other thing. That was a whole other layer.
Yes.
Yeah. That really mixed things up. And so at that point, I was at this really dark place in my life, but I still felt this connection to the religion. You know, I struggled for many years, I think, because it was so deeply embedded in me from when I was a kid that it was just always a big part of who I was. And so it always had such a big pull on me. And that's why I just kept going through these roller coasters, right? Like I could not get away from it. And so I ended up going back to the meetings. I ended up getting reinstated after some time. And I was really focused on doing what was right again. You know, I had some friends that were there for me that I really appreciate and love a lot to this day. If any of you ever watch this, I love you. That never changes. I got your back forever. But at that point, I was like 27-ish, and I started dating this girl who was kind of a witness, but kind of wasn't. Like, we ended up meeting up, and we were both kind of like, you know, walking in the gray area. You know, at that time, I moved to the coast, and I was living like 5 minutes from the beach. And so I felt great. Like, life was great. My job was going really good. And it was hard because I was kind of a late bloomer in that I lived at home like a lot longer than I would have liked to. And so I ended up moving out later. And so when I moved out, I had all this freedom where I was like, oh my God, I could do whatever I want now. I don't have to go to meetings if I don't want to. I'm not just going because my parents are telling me, oh, I want it in my house and if you're living under my roof. So that was a different feeling completely. Just knowing like I'm my own man 100% and I'm not attached to that anymore, that family. And so at that point, I started to like go, okay, who am I? Like, what does Dre believe? Like, where am I going in my life? Right. And at that point, I was still trying to be a good witness guy. I'd moved to this new congregation. And, you know, if you're a single brother and you move to a new congregation, everybody just like grasps onto you and like wants to know everything about you, right? Like,
the elders and the sisters.
Yeah, right. I had all these sisters coming up to me, like, so are you seeing anybody? And I'm like, the hell? God, it's so weird.
Yeah, it is weird. Yeah.
They'll try to play matchmaker and like, so are you know the brothers, so are you reaching out? Like, I just moved here, bro. I'm trying to find my bearings, but I was still trying, right? Mm-hmm. Even though I had all these feelings inside, I was still trying. But then things started happening that really upset me where you know, for instance, one of the sisters approached me to help this girl move. And I was like, yeah, I'd be happy to help her move. So I went, I helped her move. And the girl that I was helping move was studying with this sister. And she was like coming into the organization. And so I was like trying to be friendly. And, you know, she was a pretty woman. She went through a divorce, had three little girls. So I was not by no means interested in this girl at all. I was just trying to be friendly and helpful. So I helped her move and we became friends. And I'd see her at the Kingdom Hall and I'd be like, hey, like, how are you? It's good to see you. How are your girls? Like, always just friendly conversation. Well, certain people started to notice in the congregation that I was getting close to this girl. And I get a phone call from the elders like, hey, we need to talk to you. We need your help with a certain publisher in the congregation. I was just kind of like, what is this about? Like I don't get where you're coming with this. Mm-hmm. And so I ended up meeting with these two guys and they read me this scripture. I forget what scripture it was. It was like, it is our responsibility if we see a man before he takes a step to avoid that step or something like that.
Oh, yes.
Yeah. You know the one I'm talking about?
Yes. I know that one.
They love that one.
I used to be able to call that to a memory and I can't right now. I get what you're saying. Yeah. So it's like they saw something, they saw you about to do something. So the loving thing would do to be tell you before you took that step is where they were going with it.
Right. Right. I think they use that. I think that's one of their favorite ones so they could flex on people. You know what I
definitely.
Mean?
Yes. Yeah. Like I see it's like a pre-crime, like a Tom Cruise movie. Like I see that you're about to do something that's probably not good. What? Like you're
probably, Minority Report. That's a good movie. I like that movie.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So I was like, this is a lot like JW.
Yeah. True. Yeah. So yeah, they called me in and yeah. So, you know, several people have noticed that you've been getting close to this girl. And I was like, what are you talking about? I'm like, I've never, you know, I don't know what you're talking about. I mean, she had worked at a restaurant and I'd gone there with friends before and seen her working there, but that was it. I never texted her, nothing. Well, you know, brother, we're just concerned. You guys are both attractive people and, you know, she's coming into the organization. We just want to make sure that, you know, nothing happens. And I remember feeling so like kind of disrespected by that. I was like, wow, like I'm just trying to be nice. Like I just helped her. Like the fact that people would like think that it, one, mind your business.
Right.
Do something. Go study or something. Like, go study. You know.
Yes, exactly. Yeah.
Go highlight your watchtower. Like, you know, that just always bugged me. You know,
well, what gets me about something like that is because that was my experience too, is just being a friendly person and a single sister. The thing is, I lived at home till I was 28. So same. If we're in this brotherhood and it's all about love and what part of me just being polite makes me out to be this floos who's ready to jump this guy's bones. Like I was just being nice and it was like, they ended up making it so dramatic too. Like, we want to know what your intentions are. What are you talking about? I helped this person move. Like, what do you even mean? I'm sorry you went through that. That sucks. It is constant motives that are impugned constantly to the point where you even think, well, maybe I did do something. Maybe I did behave a certain way. And you start gaslighting yourself to think that.
Yeah. It's so true. Very common. I think a lot of people can relate to that.
Oh, yeah.
And that's very off-putting because it's like, you are not the police. This is not your responsibility to monitor everything I do in my life. Like, especially when I'm just trying my best to be a quote unquote good spiritual man. So that happened. And like I said, at that time I was living on my own. I was more independent. And I'm like, I don't need this shit. Like, What are you doing? Like, you know, I had this neck up checkup with myself, right? Like, be like talk in the mirror to myself, right? I still do, by the way. I'm like, hey, you got this, bro.
Yeah.
But like, I would like be like, what are you doing? Why are you doing? Like, you have so many opportunities in front of you. You don't need this. Like, so I ended up kind of becoming inactive for a little while, and I was living my best life ever, right? Like I was loving life. I was dating different girls. I was doing fun things and having a good time. And enter this girl who was a family friend, who was kind of a witness, kind of not. She didn't grow up in it. And so her and I started hanging out. And at the time, she was disfellowshipped and I was inactive. And so we were hanging out and, you know, we were living living in fornication and sin, you know.
Two grown adults consenting.
Oh, God. Oh, we're such fiends.
This story, I tell you, you just get more scandalous.
I know. Oh, YouTube, I'm sorry. Oh, my goodness.
And the more you say it out loud, the more you realize, oh, I'm not nearly as bad as I thought I was or they thought I was. It's okay. Continue. Yeah. So.
Right. It's great.
So you meet a cute girl. So, you both like each other.
Yeah. Yeah. Right.
Yeah.
Shouldn't be that much more complicated, but you know,
it is.
She was disfellowshipped. I was inactive. At that point, I was like already like, I don't want to go back. Like I was in my mind, like, it's not for me. Like, I'd been going through this roller coaster all my life. Like now I'm living on my own and I'm my own person. I'm thinking outside of the box. I've always been such an open individual. I have an open heart. I have an open mind. I like people from all walks of life and all philosophies, that it was always so difficult to have that one track mind. And I just, that isn't who I am. And so I was like, okay, I don't think I'm going to go back. She wanted to get reinstated. And so I was like, hey, you got to do what you got to do, but like, understand something. I'm not going to change what I'm doing. And if you're going to get reinstated, I'm like, take my advice. Cause when I got reinstated, the first time, the only time, I was not really doing everything 100%. I was still kind of doing some shady stuff on the side. And so when they asked me the questions, like, have you stopped X, Y, and Z? I was like, yeah, but like I had my fingers crossed behind my back. And so that really sat with me for many years. Like that made me feel really guilty. I felt like a piece of shit. I was like, so always felt so bad. And for years I wanted to go turn myself in, like take me in, like, you know? And so I told her, I said, babe, if you're going to do it right. Don't end up like me, like where you have regret and you don't feel like you were sincere. And so she was trying to do it right. And at the time, like we were having a hard time breaking things off with each other. And my family knew that we were seeing each other and we were living in sin. And so everybody was like, oh, you guys just need to get married. Go get married. That'll solve everything. Get married. You guys love each other. Just get married. Like, so then you won't be living in sin so that she could get reinstated and it's all good. Like, get married. That's the solution. So I got married. And yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, I ended up getting married, and I loved her, I think. Like I loved her as a person, but I don't know if I ever really loved her. And that's sad. That hurts me to say that. You know, it's not how I envisioned.
More JW marriages than maybe they didn't get married under the circumstances that you were in, but it's many JW marriages because you're put in this box. Like these are the people you're going to be hanging with for the rest of your life. These are the people you're going to be dating. And you kind of pick from that box of people. So yeah, I mean, same thing with my marriage, now divorced, and everyone, well, I shouldn't say everyone, that's an absolute term, but most of the guests who come on here, having been through marriage, they say the same thing. Like, I think I loved them, but when you wake up and you leave and you look back on life and relationships, you realize you weren't even really taught how to have boundaries, how to love people, how to love yourself. These are the simplest things that many people learn that aren't under intense indoctrination for decades. So this makes sense.
That hurts my heart, right? I was watching this rom-com last night called The Holiday.
It's my favorite of all time.
That's a great movie, right? Oh, it's such a great movie.
They're making a part two. All of, oh my
God.
Yes, I just found out that they're making, and I got so excited about this. So, yeah.
Right. We'll have to talk about that later.
Yes.
But that's awesome. but anyways, like, Yeah, I believe in romance and love, and that breaks my heart that so many people go into marriages like that, right? Like, it's sad. And so that was my situation. And it was unfortunate, you know, because we get married, she gets reinstated, and now at that point we're married, and it's like, you need to be the spiritual man, right? It's like, I want you to take the spiritual lead. And I'm like, girl, you knew where I was when we got married. I told you. And now there's all this expectation. Now the elders want to have shepherding calls. Now, you know, it just got so much more complicated, and I was not equipped to handle all that. Like, I was still trying to figure me out and my spirituality, and then get thrust into a marriage and have someone else and all their issues and all their things and PTSD they're dealing with. It was so tough. And I ended up getting very depressed again. I ended up kind of falling back on some old habits, and that created a lot of issues in our marriage. And right off the bat, we had issues, and it was very toxic. And I said and did a lot of hurtful things that I'm not proud of, that I wish I could take back. And it hurts. It was a chapter in my life that really hurts. And so we ended up getting divorced. But before that took place, I ended up getting disfellowshipped, because I ended up cheating on her. And that was stupid. That was a bad call. But just where I was in my headspace at that point and what I was doing, you know, one thing kind of led to another. Sure. And so, you know, we go talk to the elders, and I ended up getting disfellowshipped, and I ended up, you know, in this place where my family took her side and took her in and had her back and supported her and kind of just kicked me to the curb. And that was so hard. That was so painful. That was 3 or 4 years ago, roughly. About 3 years ago. Yeah, give or take. And so that was just such a difficult part of my life. I felt so alone. I was just at such a rough point in life. And at that point, like, I just was over it. I was over the religion, but I just couldn't pull away from it inside my heart, right? There was still this like anchor there. And it wasn't until like just a couple years ago, really, where I finally, I don't know what it was, or I don't know how it came to be, but like, I finally started, like, I like saw a YouTube video or something of like this guy was like an elder, and he's like, well, I decided to leave the religion. And he like listed out like all this stuff. And he was like a regular pioneer elder guy for many years, starts talking about all the pedophilia cases, starts talking about all this stuff. And I'm like, holy crap. Like, it blew my mind. Like, all the inner workings of that organization that goes on, all the corruption, I was like, this is sick. And I felt like that was it. I was like, okay, I'm never going back. Like, hell no. And it was so weird at first, because it felt so wrong, right?
Sure.
You're like watching this stuff and you're like, oh, this is so bad. Yeah. I'm such a bad person.
Yeah.
I'm going to burn for this.
And yeah, so, and if you're watching this or listening to this on the podcast and you're hiding under your covers, clearly Dre and I are walking examples of how you are not going to get hit with a fireball for watching a YouTube video or listening to a podcast about people who have walked this journey. So I completely, yes, I remember that. Terrifying. Like, oh my God, Jehovah could see me watching this video, and these are apostates. And I would think really terrifying things, for sure. Yeah.
Yeah. It's crazy. I agree. And it's such a trip thinking about it now. Like, that term apostate was like the ultimate, like, that was the worst.
Yes.
That was like Hitler. Like, you are part of the Gestapo.
Yes.
You are the worst person ever, right? Mm-hmm. And so now, looking at it, like, these apostates are some of the realest, nicest people ever. They're
right.
Sincere. Like, it boggles my mind. But that was what led to a lot of my resolve, like, I am done. Like, I'm not going to be in my feels about it no more. I'm not going to be beating myself up anymore. This is twisted, and I don't want to go back to that. And, you know, I started meeting people. I started joining ex-Jehovah's Witness groups and hearing people's stories. And it was just real to me what people have gone through and how hurtful it is. And I realized that my story was not unique and that a lot of people had gone through it. And that was something that I needed at the time, because I was like, I need some support, right? Like, I have friends that are not Jehovah's Witnesses that have been there for me, that are my family now, and they have heard my story. They're there for me. I have friends that I do relate to that were from other religions that had crazy restrictive families. But as we know, it's a very different dynamic being a Jehovah's Witness growing up that way.
Very much.
And so I wanted some people that could relate to me, that I could talk to, that actually got it. And so I joined these groups on Facebook and started meeting these people, and that really helped. That really helped me feel normal. That really helped me feel like, hey, there is a light at the end of the tunnel. You're not always going to be in this perpetual state of fear, waiting for Armageddon to come and, you know, feeling like your life is just over, dead on arrival. And so that really helped me get to this place. And it's been a process. It's been about, like I said, like 2-3 years, like where I finally was like able to like come out of it and feel good, you know, feel like me. This is the first time in my life I've ever felt like me. It's funny. I celebrated my second birthday for the first time last year.
Yay. Happy birthday. It's, and here's the thing. I look back and I love that you say that now, because when I look back on people who were by your description, the ones in the congregation who never really took to it, they were kind of in and out. I was a rule follower. I was a robot. I was the peemiest of peemies. Someone like you, to now, what I know now is that it just means that the indoctrination couldn't actually penetrate you. It couldn't act penetrate. I don't want to say that. That the indoctrination couldn't, Wendy, the indoctrination actually couldn't actually overtake you. You know, there was something within you saying, I don't believe this. I don't believe this. But yet the influence was very strong. And what I find terrible about this organization is, and you said several times, being a good Jehovah's Witness, the focus was not, am I a good person? Am I a good human being? The focus is being a good Jehovah's Witness. And you think when you're in that organization that the two are synonymous, and they're just not. And now here I am in my 40s, and you, whatever age you're in, and you feel like, oh, this is what it's like to be me. This is what it's like to make my own decisions. And listening to your story, it just sounds so inspiring, because so many of the decisions you made were based on decisions that were not of your own volition. They were just kind of, we just kind of fell into these circumstances, and then we get reprimanded for making decisions within these coerced circumstances. It's just this whole, like you said in the beginning, there's just so many layers. And now you realize, oh, I'm going to be okay. I'm going to make it.
It's a beautiful feeling. It's beautiful. Anybody who's going through that, like, wherever you are in the journey, like, just know that you are beautiful. You are worth it. You have a beautiful soul. You can be what you want to be, and it's okay. And I assure you, once you get to that point, life can be real beautiful. You know, like, I've met some great people that are my family, and, you know, it's still, you still have your days. You do. Like, yeah. I still wish I had a better relationship with my parents. My family, you know, like, that's not normal, you know, and it still hurts. But it's all about what you tell yourself up here, and it's all about who you surround yourself with. Mm-hmm. And I think those are some of the biggest things that have helped me. You know, of course, therapy is great for anybody, really. Therapy,
anybody, yeah.
It's helpful. You know, you need to know who you are. You need to know what your problems are, where your PTSD comes from, so that you could come up with healthy solutions to those things. So that's important. Having some healthy habits are important. You know, these are all things that I think anybody should strive to do better. But for me, it's been a bumpy road. I'm still a work in progress. You know, I haven't figured it out. I'm still trying to figure out when I'm going to be an adult. I just turned 35, and I was like, I thought I'd be more of an adult by now. You
know? Well, I'm 42, and I still don't know what I want to do when I grow up.
You know,
like, one of the things that really inspired me when you said, I still felt a connection to the religion. And that immediately reminded me of when I first started waking up. I looked at the religion objectively, like it's a toxic relationship that I just cannot pull myself away from. And when you're in a toxic relationship, I don't know your complete dating history just based on what you told me. But when you're in a toxic relationship, there are reasons you just keep going back for whatever reason, and you're just drawn to it and your family's involved, then it just seems easier to just go back to this toxic relationship. And then when you're finally free of it, think of how many people in our audience maybe have left abusive marriages or abusive relationships or domestic violence victims. They go back for many reasons. And now that they're out, it's like this entire world just kind of opened up to them. Like food smells different. You start seeing sounds and hearing colors, you know, and it's just so amazing when you look at the religion as that. You did, we had a connection to it because it was in our DNA, because it was just part of our life. It's very hard to explain to people who have never been through it before. But what does life look like for you now? You've obviously had this remarkable journey to get where you're at. So what does life look like for you now?
My life has been great. I'm very grateful for everything I have, for all the people that I have in my life. I just started a new job. So I'm really excited about that. I just started on Monday last week. So I'm stoked on that. It's at a great company, a lot of opportunities. So that's really cool. I have a wonderful girlfriend that I've been dating for a year now. It's crazy. And this is my first relationship I've ever been in, right? Like outside of the organization. So that's been a whole thing in itself, but that's been great. I love music. I create my own music. I write music, and I like to play gigs in San Diego around here where I live. So I'm focused on that when I have some time to make that happen. And I'm just really excited to continue on this journey. You know, I'm really excited to continue getting to know me more. And, you know, hopefully this can help someone that's in their feels right now about anything. You know, maybe it's, you know, being in the religion, or maybe it's just trying to get in touch with yourself or just stay true to whoever you are. That's my mission, is just to continue to understand who I am and continue to be the best person I can be. You know?
I love that you said that. It's just continue to learn about yourself. I find that it takes a lot of self-awareness to come out of something like this and to be able to confidently say, you know, I survived and I got through it. You know, what I find interesting too, is that there is this beautiful piece that comes from not knowing, not having the answers. When you're told your whole life that you're right, you have the truth, especially about people. I thought I was intuitive and an empath on the inside. Boy, when I'm out, I realize I know nothing about life, about people, and surrounding myself with people who I want to emulate, surrounding myself by people who know better than me, who are wiser than me. You know, I find that to be actually really refreshing to be around people. Something else I wanted to ask you though, what does faith and belief look like for you now that you're out? And when you're told your whole life what to believe, sometimes it can be very disorienting coming out. What does that look like for you now?
So that's a great question. That's kind of been a process in itself, right? Like faith and spirituality. You know, in my mind growing up, it was always Jehovah. And it was, I forgot what happened or something. I was talking to my brother. Like sometimes I like to go down the rabbit hole of conspiracies because I like taking different stuff from all over. My mind is like a sponge. I'm like, give me it all. The aliens? Hell yeah.
I'm the same. Yeah. Give me it all. And then I'll decide what I believe in. Like I'll decide what I know. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I'm going to message you a documentary that I watched about aliens. That'll blow your mind.
I dig it.
I was talking to my brother about like the occult and stuff like that. And I'm like, okay, so we went down the rabbit hole with like the Illuminati and like, you know, the occult and just these different things. And I was like, so if the devil exists, that means there has to be a God, because they're one and the same. It came from them. So if he exists, there has to be a Jehovah. And if Jehovah exists, than the religion. And I'm like, I was like,
no,
you know, I just was spun out, right? My brother's like, Dre, you could believe in God and it doesn't have to be Jehovah. He's like, there's, you know, there's been gods for thousands of years, like Zeus and like Ra, and like throughout civilization, people have worshiped these gods and have these different faiths that they've had.
Right.
You can be a religious person or be a spiritual person and not have to be religious. Mm-hmm. And that was a crazy concept to me. I was like, holy crap, you can? Because it was like, again, where we came from, it's like when people would be like, oh, I'm spiritual, I'd be all judgy. I'd be like, oh, what does that mean? You know?
Yeah, because spiritual from our background is behaviors. Spiritual is, you know, ticking off boxes of a certain look, a certain appeal to the general public. That's what spiritual actually meant. Well, because of the loaded language, they capitalized on very beautiful words that they redefined words. So now you're in this redefining process of what spiritual actually means. So yeah, that was rough for me too, finding that out.
Yeah, it was. Something that helped me was about a year ago, I was dating this girl. She was the first person I dated after I got divorced. And she was really into spirituality. Like she was into like Reiki treatments and chakras and pendulums and spirit guides and all this stuff. Right. And coming out of it, that was the total opposite end of the spectrum from my own belief set. So it was a little creepy to me. I'll be honest. I would go in her apartment and she had a cool setup, right? All these crystals and all the stuff all over, dream catchers, all this really dope. But at the time I was not ready for that. Like I had not reached that point in my journey. Mm-hmm. And so she would tell me about her spirit guides and these crazy lucid dreams she would have. And it would kind of freak me out.
Yeah, like, it can.
I'd be like, I was kind of like I even have some friends that I'm good friends with that are not Jehovah's Witnesses that were even kind of like, you know what I'm saying? Yeah. So like, for me, I was like, holy crap. I didn't know how to accept that. And while I dated her, I was a little, I didn't receive her as gracefully as I wish I could. Mm-hmm. She would try to share things with me and I still kind of would have that little voice in my head and this little thing. But I think one of the things that really helped me talk about healing this whole process was during that process, we ended up having some mushrooms, her and I. We went through this, you know, process together and I had this moment that tripped me out. Like I had this trip that was so insane and so profound. And that really helped make me wake up from the religion. That's a big one for me. I'm a huge advocate for psilocybin and different type of treatments like that. There's definitely a lot of, ayahuasca, DMT.
Ayahuasca. I say that wrong every time. Ayahuasca.
Ayahuasca. How do you say
it? I'm going to get a sign above my computer. Ayahuasca?
Oh, ayahuasca?
I don't know. Yeah. Whatever. I'm not a wizard.
Say it with me now. Ayahuasca. Ayahuasca.
You know, the XJW therapist, doctor, he's Dr. Ryan Lee. He told me a lot. He told me about that. He told me about using, I forget what class they are. I've never used them, so I'm still ignorant to that. But he used that in healing other people. He does it in Peru. And that's where he turned me onto it. And I've been very I'm a very spiritual person. Past lives. I'm interested in all of it. But what the conclusion I came to is I don't want to just believe. I want to know. Mm-hmm. And in the organization, we got so wrapped up in just believing. And not, I mean, we probably know more about the organization being on this side than I did when I was on the inside. Just the facts going on. Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Isn't that crazy?
There's this awareness that happens.
Yeah, that you could be in something so long and have no idea.
No idea.
Scratching the tip of the iceberg.
Yeah.
Like what blows my mind is what would people do if, have you ever seen that movie, A Clockwork Orange? It's also a book. Mm-mm. It's a Stanley Kubrick movie that was adapted into a movie from a book. It's a great movie. But at the end, this guy is being institutionalized and they have this guy who's a villain. And they take him and they like keep his eyes open and they put these drops in him and have him sit in this chair and like watch all these crazy like scenes on the screen. Can you imagine if witness people had to go through that and see like the East Australian Commission, like all the pedophilia stuff, like, and they were just made to watch that?
Sometimes I envision myself doing that to some PMEs that I know of. I envision myself holding them with their eyes open and just saying, just watch, just watch.
Right? Just watch.
Just watch. It doesn't mean anything. Just to have a general, here's the thing you can't even do in there. You can't even disagree. You can't even have a conversation. Mm. You can't even question the governing body. You can't do any of those things. And so I find you remind me so much of my older brother, because Ronnie was very much like you. He just was this nonconformist type of personality. He just didn't fit in, but he's actually this beautiful spiritual art loving writer. He's just a beautiful soul. And it makes sense when your intuition is challenged, ultimately your intuition is going to win, whether it's sooner or later. And so I find your whole story so relatable and so fascinating. And now we're at this pinnacle point where we get to always at the conclusion of the show. I even hate that word, conclusion. Do you see what I mean? Like, they capitalize on so many words. Your younger self is in the audience. Did we cover this? I got so wrapped up in your story.
No, I don't think so.
Okay. Your younger self, the one who is kind of in flux, about to wake up, not really sure what to do. They're in that audience. What would you say right now to him?
Love yourself. You're a good boy. You're a good kid. You didn't mean to drop dad's tackle box in the river. It was an accident. You're a good kid. You're a good boy. Keep your heart open. Do what feels right. Don't get married to that girl. I love you.
Oh my gosh.
I hope that my friends and family get a chance to see this and just know that I love you. I'll always be here for you. It hurts that having a different outlook on life creates such a wedge between us, but I get it. But that doesn't change how I feel about you guys. I love you very much. I got some music I'm working on. So if you guys want to go check out my music on Spotify, on iTunes, Wilder Hayes is my alias for music. So check that out. I think you'll appreciate the music I write, especially if you want to hear something that's uplifting and got a good beat to it. One love. I hope that you can reach your highest level of self-awareness and just continue keeping your heart open. You know, it's a crazy world we're living here, and we need more love. You know, like you asked me where my spirituality is now. I think my biggest dilemma now is I am so anti-establishment. Like, this whole world is such a shit show. Like, I'm like, there, I try not to be so bleak and like thinking that we're all fucked, but I mean,
that brings you, like, back to doomsday. That's why.
true. That's why I say I try. But I, it's try. Like, I'm just enjoying every experience that I can right now with the ones I love. I think that's all we can do. Try to do nice things for each other. That always helps me. Like, smile at somebody, you know, tell someone they have a cool shirt.
Yeah.
Or tell someone their hair looks great. You know, those little things go a long way. When you're at the store and they ask if you want to round up your change for the children's hospital, do it. That feels good and it goes a long way. That's how you change the world, is little things like that. Little things that you might not think are a big deal matter. So
I can't believe you're saying this. You know, this is exactly my philosophy in life. You know, the way I reason on it is I could be having the shittiest day. And I believe that for me to receive, I want to give out. So that's my biggest belief. For example, if I'm at the cash register and I'm happy to see her. First of all, I'm sure she doesn't love her job. I don't know what her day was, but how do I know that based on my interaction with this person, that the rest of their day is based on that? And I would hate to be the one that made it even worse. Or like, if I could just make someone smile for a second, then that's worth it to me, to kind of put my feelings on the back burner, my frustrations and what led me there. Just ignore that and just say, you know what? Thank you so much. And I really hope you have a wonderful day. It takes nothing to be kind to other people. And in that organization, we only kind of stuck to each other, right? And in times of disaster, you only stuck to other witnesses. There was no donations to other organizations. There was no charitable events. There was no helping the homeless or feeding the poor. There was none of that. And I think now that you're out and you really want to give back to receive, thank you for saying that. I think that that's a beautiful way of living.
Absolutely. You know, there's a couple things in the Bible that still stuck with me. Mm-hmm. And it's true. There's more joy in giving than receiving. It makes you feel good. You know, it makes you feel good to do selfless things for people. So,
even though the Bible is a little triggering for, I mean, us, it's, but It still is a great piece of literature, regardless of whether or not you live your life by it, like The Great Gatsby or Grapes of Wrath. Like it has some really good, decent quotes in it. And from the religion, what I've learned is nothing is all good or all bad. So you take whatever good you learned from it. I don't know, public speaking. I had a congregation full of, it was a melting pot of races and backgrounds and ethnicities. And I had a really great relationship with the majority of the elderly people that I was exposed to. And those are the good things that I brought away from that.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Yeah. So anybody listening, if you still appreciate the Bible, that's not a bad thing. I mean, it has helped a lot of people. You know, the Bible in itself is not the problem. It's how people use it. That's the problem. So yeah, if you have things about it that you relate to still, don't forsake those things. That doesn't make you bad. Don't give yourself a hard time.
You know? No, you certainly like won't get a hard time on this channel. We have multiple people who still believe, who don't know. I'm in the I don't know category.
Yeah.
And I feel cool.
I'm just waiting for the aliens. That's my thing.
You know what? You're one
I'm
of
like,
the first.
Beat me up.
You're one of the first. Hey, listen, if they've got clean water up there and they've got like, you know, a calming environment with Himalayan salt lamps, I'm cool to roll with the aliens. I am down with that.
Oh yeah.
So we're going to follow all of you. We're going to follow you on Instagram, Wilder Hayes, and we're going to see what you're doing with music, and we're going to catch up with you another time. Would love to have you back to talk more about spirituality, mushrooms, whatever it is you want to talk about in your healing journey. How do you feel about that?
That'd be a lot of fun. No, I think that'd be great. This is a great community. I think what you're doing is awesome. I've watched several of your interviews and it's beautiful. You know, it's great what you're doing and I think it helps a lot of people. So yeah, I would love that. That'd be great.
Thank you. I'm working on receiving. So it's what I'm personally working on. I'm working on receiving compliments and I will receive that and I will not edit that one out.
Good. You should.
Well, thank you so much. And we'll catch up with you next time.
Sounds good.
Thank you so much for watching. That is what we do here at Devout. We're just here to encourage you guys and continue to remind you that despite what you're currently going through, wanting to leave narcissistic abuse and high control religion, there is positivity, hope, and joy on the other side of that. So thank you so much for watching and we'll see you next time.